Yeah. So I was saying in the 2 seconds before we pressed record that I figured Christy would go pink. So I went green.
Like that was what the natural. I'm gonna turn a light on because
Christy, you do look like you're in the dark even more than normal.
even more than normal is because I am more than normal. I just wanted to close the blinds so that Penny doesn't have a like barking fit at somebody.
Ariana,
Ariana, look at she's in her Ariana state.
Glinda.
Glinda. Oh my gosh. So you're sick. You have bronchitis.
Sure do.
And I definitely have a cold. So our preemptive apologies for any noise.
Don't make me laugh. It sounds like there's some sort of like train in my soul whenever I laugh. Yeah, I've gotten bronchitis before, once before, and I thought I was gonna die.
Throat stuff is the worst.
Well, it was my throat, but then it was my chest. So if it sounds like I'm in love and breathless, one of those things is very true. The other is true as well. Let me see.
Was like, they better both be truly.
They are. I just can't. I can't. Like, I walk up the stairs and it's bad. It's
Yeah.
crazy.
Yeah.
So, but it has been confirmed that is what it is. It's just, I mean, if COVID, people who got COVID, I got it, but I got it after I had the shot. So it wasn't this. But, like, if
When I
this is
had
kind of.
COVID and I had the shot, but it hit me really hard. But it was more like my head. The most I remember is I truly thought that my brain had swollen so much that it was going to crack my skull. And I was like, I need to go to the ER because
This
my
is the difference between. See, I can't laugh. I probably should be in the ER right now.
I mean, I didn't go. I just like
I'm glad. I'm glad.
I think about like how I'm about to die. I have a touch of my grandfather's, what is the word?
Paranoia?
No, the specific one where you think you're sick all the time.
Oh, I. Hypochondriac.
Hypochondriac, yeah.
I knew it was hypo something, yeah.
I always forget it, and then I always almost say something entirely different. Anyway, I have a touch of that, and so I always think that I'm much sicker than I am, but I'm also like too aware that I have that, and so it's a real problem because I don't go to the doctor when I'm actually sick. Like I was having gallbladder attacks for a year and a half before I went to the doctor because I was like, it's
You thought
stress.
your brain was going to crack your skull.
But then I'm like, my brain is going to crack my skull. I need to go to the ER. And then I don't go. So, but
Think I have a pretty, like, I think I have a pretty, and that's partially, I think, having a nurse for a mom is that, you couldn't really BS much. So
yeah.
it's like, I think I pride myself on if I'm actually sick. My mom always said this too, is that I will tell you I'm sick, but it's real.
I am going to be very dramatic, which is a shocker, I know.
I'm shocked. My shocked is shocked.
I'm going to be very dramatic until I'm very sick, and then I become very calm. And I just kind of state, like, very matter-of-factly, like, I am very sick. And that apparently freaks everyone out because they're like, you're not a calm person. It's when you become
No, that's
calm.
yeah, Stuart. I think I told you once. Stuart says when I go quiet,
Yeah.
he
It's like,
says
oh no.
you just are like a cat dying, and he says like a cat dying under a porch.
Yeah.
He's like you just sort of like curl up on yourself and just don't talk. And he's like, that's when I know.
That's when like one time I had to have a friend take me to the to urgent care. I was really sick. And she was like, it was so creepy because you were so calm, but you looked like you were about to die.
Well,
And
but I
like,
think that's the thing is that you have to harness when you're really sick all your energy on
on the not sickness. I'm not dying.
I'm not dying. Yeah. I mean, to put
there's nothing dramatic. Left to be dramatic.
Yeah. You're just like sitting here. So when I went to go see Wicked recently, as in yesterday, recently, I was so focused because really the only thing that's wrong now is like my breath is out of whack. I can't really do anything, but like I cough a lot.
Yeah.
Just like these coughing fits because I think it's like trying to clear out.
Yeah.
But like when I was in the movie, I had one and I was like, but because, when I was sat next to someone and I got so panicked.
Yeah.
So I know I'm not contagious anymore, but it's like they don't know that.
They don't know
I
that.
I sound like I've been working in the mines my whole life. Like, I wouldn't want to sit next to me at all.
Fair.
So, like, I had to leave. And then Stuart and I moved to the back row, to the very top. Because I was like, I'm going to go insane. Just let me go insane by myself. And then I didn't cough anymore. Because I think part of it was the stress of, like, this woman and her girlfriend who were very excited to see this film. And then I was like,
you're, like, dying. Like, oh no. Yeah.
Again, I can tell you the exact moment. It was when the goat comes in and he starts saying
something bad.
He's struggling. And she's being a C next Tuesday.
Yep.
And I had to leave in it for a minute and then I came back in and she was teaching her how to levitate a coin. And I was like, I probably didn't miss too much.
I have to tell you, I had to pee twice during it because the theater that we went to serves, I know, but it serves like food and drinks.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they were doing a special. It was half off a bottle of wine. And so Amanda and I were like, yeah, sounds great. So we had a bottle of, like, the two of us had a bottle of wine.
Oh, gosh.
And, you know, like, three of the giant glasses of water, because if you put water in front of me, I'm gonna drink it. Like, I've never had a drop of water in my life. Yeah, so I had to pee twice, and the second time I really thought we were nearing the end of the movie, and so I was like, I'm gonna hold it, like, I'm gonna make it, it's almost over. And then I looked at Amanda and I was like, I really have to pee. And she was like, we still have 45 minutes left. And I was like, I can't. And she was like, I have to pee too. Let's just go. And we literally, we ran out of the theater, ran to the bathroom. And like, I've never peed so fast. And then ran back in. Because you don't want to be gone at the end there.
No, you don't. Well, I didn't want to be gone in the middle. And even when.
You don't want to be gone ever. But like, ugh.
I didn't even know. I don't even think that was the middle. But I came back in and. You know, there's always like a montage of like, they make fun of it. It's a montage. It's like, suddenly she learns how to do all the things.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that was the montage.
Yeah. But I mean, there are definitely points that are okay to leave. Like, you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know, you probably picked a good one. I was going to burst. I was like, sorry for whatever I missed, but.
In different ways.
I don't think anyone here wants me to stay.
And then Stuart was like, you know, well, okay. Because I said, I'm going to have to leave and get water. And he goes, okay. And I was like, okay. Like, he was like, I'm not leaving.
That's he's fine. Like, bye.
He's like, bye.
And how I was like, like it? Does Stuart like it?
Stuart loved it. And, but like, I think I said this and I did say this in our girls chat. Is like the best thing about dating someone who's really nerdy, like at their core, who got picked on a lot in high school, which sure does both of those things, is that they never make fun of you for liking things.
Yeah.
And so I was like, look, you saw the text exchange. I was like, look, you may not want to do this. It's okay if you don't want to, but it could be fun. Like, I'll treat you to it.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I want to go. He was like, this sounds amazing. And come to find out, he was also raised by women.
Right.
But he had gone to the stage play. Now, interestingly enough, I had not. I actually didn't know anything about... Well, I knew what... Because, you know, Ariana and Cynthia were really hustling.
They were really hustling.
Circuit.
So, I'm so curious about this because I have a lot of Wicked knowledge because I've read all of the books. And I
apparently
saw
the books are effed up.
The Wicked, the actual book that it's technically based on, is crazy dark. And
yeah, that's like, what I'm like.
It is, yeah, it is intense. And then he wrote another one called Son of a Witch, which is about Elphaba's son, as you may have picked up on, which I didn't like at all. I will tell you that he wrote one about the stepsisters in Cinderella that is by far his best book, and nobody talks about it. It's a really, really good book, but I don't actually recommend the book. Like, it's really messed
up. That's what everyone says that I've talked to is like, don't read it. It's not, it's just kind of weird and not good.
Yeah. And then I saw the play, I saw the musical in 2007. Toured, and I saw it with my friend Garen in Denver. Carol King was actually Madame Morrible when we saw it.
Oh wow. Well guys, so, I do want to go ahead.
So I'm just really curious because I want to know, like, from your perspective of not having anything coming into it, and then like versus I had a lot there to be like, yeah. I have, you know, expectations and stuff, but I'm just so curious.
Yeah, so guys, welcome to Theology on the Rocks. This is Christy and Leah, and today we're going to be talking about Wicked because
obviously,
clearly, we've already done it. But also, there's a lot of theology in it, and I find that interesting. We are doing green and pink drinks. If you want to,
yes,
carry along with us. I have figured Christy would do pink, so I did green. I found a green cup, and I'm drinking green wine. Yeah.
Green wine. So interesting.
Vino verde.
Nice. I have, my cup is clear, but I have a pink gin and tonic. I should have put it in my unicorn cup. That would have been perfect, but I didn't think about it until just right now.
I have a collection of cups that I've gotten from strange bars, I just realized this is one of them.
I just
picked out a green cup, but it says, in Atlanta, they ask you what you do for a living. In Charleston, they ask you who your grandmother was. In Macon, they ask you what church you go to. But in Savannah, they ask you, what do you want to drink? It's not very funny. It was like a big buildup. Shout out to the Warehouse Bar and Grill, which nice. I'm sure is on River Street in Savannah, I'm guessing.
I feel like now we have to take another visit there.
Well, you already said we're going to, because it's kind of in between, but also the bananas. We have to go see the bananas.
We have to go see the Savannah bananas. I've never been to Savannah, and it's on my bucket list, and it is, like, right in the middle of us, so we're going to do it.
It's one of the good guys. It's all the things. It's cutesy and spooky.
Yeah, I love that.
Cutesy, spooky, and boozy.
Perfect.
So, yeah, that's what we're doing today. We're going to talk about Wicked, if I can get my
Wicked
words out.
And theology. Mm-hmm. We're not just going to talk about our opinions. We are going to talk about the theology stuff.
And we'll try not to do spoilers. I think that that's...
I mean, to an extent, I will say it's been out for 20 years. So I feel like...
that's true. But I would not have wanted to hear this podcast. Maybe go see the film first before
you... Yeah, maybe go see the... If you're really like, I don't want to know anything going into it, go see the film. I will say this is also only part one, so
yeah, no ending. Spoilers for part two, because I don't want to know about part two.
I won't tell you anything about the second part, we'll be as unspecific as possible about certain things, so
yeah. So coming into it, having I have seen The Wizard of Oz, that's all of that. I like the little shout out in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't know, I was really, when it was over, I was like, wow, that was really good. There's a lot of critical thinking that needs to go into this. I know I'm 20 some odd years late to it, but I'm also like, this is way more interesting than The Wizard of Oz, just in general.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it plays into, and you guys have heard me say this a million times, it plays into the history. I always like knowing. I feel like it adds weight to what happens to characters in films if you know their history.
Yes, I agree. I love stuff that does, like, let's take a look at this other character and see what their perspective might have been, which is a fairly I wouldn't say it's a small genre. There's quite a lot of both books and movies, TV shows that do this, of saying, like, we're going to...
There's a reason I had to watch 900 hours of Star Wars.
Yeah.
There's a lot.
I mean, there's Jean Rhys, who I did my dissertation on. Her most famous novel is exactly this, is taking one of the characters in Jane Eyre and writing the story from her perspective. So, you know, it's definitely a big thing. But I think this is what Gregory Maguire, the author of the book, did with all of his books. And I think he did it really well. The quibbles and the issues I have with the books are aside. And I think that the musical fixed a lot of those issues anyway. So, like, when we're just talking about the musical, I think it does an amazing job of saying, like, we got this story, Wizard of Oz, and, you know, it's this incredibly famous film, but let's take a look at, like, how this might have been, or what's the lead up to it. How can we understand the perspective of these other characters? How do they all tie together? Like, it built a bigger world of Wizard of Oz than the movie gave us initially, you know?
And I think it offers, like, I agree, and I think it offers, again, as someone who wasn't invested in this world, but I watch a lot of stuff that's like the hero's journey, like mm-hmm. even my horror films, fairly formulaic, and indeed I was talking about Star Wars earlier, you know, there's a clear, yeah. They're very old. You get a little bit of a redemption arc for one bad guy there in those old OG films that I won't say any more about. But, like, in general, you don't necessarily... I think the prequels of Star Wars tried to give a little bit of weight to some of the characters, especially, like, Darth Vader with Hayden Christensen and all of that.
Yeah.
But I don't know that it worked as well as what I saw in this film. Like, I think it was really good to see, like, you know, it's not just there's a good and a bad. There's a wicked and a right. good. They're complicated.
And it's all of the characters, because
yeah.
like Elphaba is certainly not wicked in the way that we talk about her in Wizard of Oz, right? She's not just wicked. And like, what does it mean to be wicked? How is she also good? Obviously, she's kind of the hero of this version. And then you have Glinda, who certainly looks like, or like is looking like she's going to move into that villain spot from like what you see happening and stuff. But you see that that's complex for her too. Like
she's not as smart, and she's a coward in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Well, and like, I think that she is, and I've seen quite a bit of people talking about this, like and we talked about it a lot when we talked about the election. That's that proximity to power that white women have that we want to hold on to, and that she is displaying that in a really well, like really kind of nuanced way. She has enough power to want to hold on to it and not give it all up and go run off with something that's risky. But I think also she isn't sure. Like, I don't think that she understands or completely buys into the other option, which, you know, like,
yeah, she's like one of those, if we want to translate it into the Christian world, she's like one of those evangelicals that's on the cusp of like deconstructing, but
yeah, she's like on the cusp of deconstruction, but no one has explained to her well enough, I think, like, that she's not losing something or why it's important to do this. There's just not enough information given to her when she's like meant to choose.
See, I disagree. I think she's just not a very, I think she's just not, I think she thinks it's too much of a risk. And like, oh,
But I don't think anyone has made it appealing to her, you know, which maybe isn't necessary.
Elphaba made it super appealing, I thought. Like, she was sitting there, like, doing her social justice evangelism at the end, like, we have to go out and right these wrongs and blah, blah, blah. And then the whole time, you know what I thought was really interesting, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I've only seen it once. There's this big, big scene at the end, again, this is quite a big spoiler, where Elphaba has sort of found her power.
Yeah.
And has said, like, you know, we've got to, I've got to go, I've got to, we've got to get out of here, we've got to do make things right, because Oz is clearly being run by a dictator at this stage.
Right.
And Glinda never says no. I think
that's, no, she doesn't. She's just really on the fence.
She is, but then I think she goes and gives her this cloak because she says she's cold.
Yeah.
And then to me, it just felt like that was her saying no.
She was. I mean, I totally get what you're saying. And I don't want to give her like too much credit. I think what I see with Glinda is, again, kind of similar to what I saw or I see with certain people who are like, you know, I voted for Trump or I didn't vote because of X, Y, and Z. That is like, yeah, but that's not going to help as much as you think it is. And it's like with her, that's what I see happening too. She's like, but if we can stay here, we could work with the wizard. We could take the safer option and accomplish something. And she thinks that that's a possibility, whereas Elphaba is like, no, it's not. And it is.
Elphaba has seen.
Elphaba understands.
They don't have any real power.
Yeah. Like, this is all a charade.
The power.
Whether it's like being able to understand or just being willingly ignorant, I think Glinda just is like, I can't jump onto that train quite yet.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think we could both be right in that, in the sense that like maybe she is just doesn't have the information. But as a result,
she's harmful.
And she's also had the system work for her.
Exactly.
Which I think is important.
Yeah.
So exactly. She thinks she can work within the system and make it better.
Because it's always worked for her.
Because it's always worked for her.
Yeah.
Like at one point she makes the shocking declaration. Oh my gosh, I didn't get my way. And she's very surprised by this.
She's like, this has never happened to me before.
This never happened.
A shocking experience for her.
Whereas like Elphaba's whole narrative is that the system never worked for her.
Right. So why would she
have no trust in it?
Yeah.
And so when Oz, or rather the wizard, shows even the slightest inclination that he is deceptive, she just immediately kind of rejects it and says, because she has no tolerance left for people who are not who they say they are, I think.
Yep. I think that's exactly it. She's already not trusting of authority, people in general. And she's watching her mentor turn into a villain as well. Like, how crushing is that?
Right. And the father figure, I would argue, that she never really had.
Yeah.
Which is a whole other thing, but like, she'd never. And I think, and again, you don't have to tell me anything, but this is another big spoiler. As I swear, they never showed. So Elphaba's mom was with another dude.
Yes.
Which resulted in Elphaba. Elphaba's mom got with her husband and made a second sister.
Correct.
But this second sister's not green. I think it's the father figure, but I also think it is the father, is the Wizard of Oz, because it's Jeff Goldblum's voice. The whole time.
I'm gonna not say anything.
Well, but I heard it. Spoilers, it's his. I would know his voice. Listeners, let me tell you about the sexual.
Jeff Goldblum has one of the most distinctive voices, and they tried to make it less obvious. And
I think they tried not so good.
I feel like they failed.
Point that man out of a. Ever since he was lounging in Jurassic Park, and I was like 12 and had no idea what was happening, but I was sure. Something in my heart was stirring like John Wesley. I know that man's voice, those dulcet tones. And they were like doing these back and forth at his face. And then like, okay, sure, but he's still talking. And I was because I knew Jeff Goldblum was in the movie, but I didn't actually know what
you didn't know that he was the wizard. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So as I looked at Sir can tell you this for a fact, I went, that's Jeff Goldblum. And he was like, okay.
I mean, it's hard to say because, like I said, I'm trying to remember. This is 2007 that I saw the musical. I definitely read the book first because I remember when it came out, and I remember like a lot. There was a lot of book nerd buzz about the book. And then again, all of his sequels and the other ones. And then we went to see the musical. So like, I never got to have that, like, oh my God, it's the wizard. Anyway.
I mean, I still don't know that I'm right, but I that's Jeff. If that they either got Jeff Goldblum to do a voiceover for this man, yeah, or I mean, it is Jeff Goldblum, because I'm telling you, you watch that movie, you tell me that's not Jeff Goldblum and he's talking. And I was like,
I mean, yeah, so you cannot pretend like that's not Jeff Goldblum in the beginning.
Not even a little bit. So either the director was like, I'm going to throw in a wrench here.
I'm going to confuse you all. I'm going to say anyway, that's not the big twist, but.
That's fine. I don't, like I said, it's hard for you because you've seen it all.
I've seen it all. I know too much, honestly. However, here's what I will say specifically. This movie is more in depth than the musical is. So they did a lot more nuance and there's a lot more history coming in. They're pulling obviously more from the book than the musical usually does. So there is some.
Well, they had to make it a two part, had to in quotes.
Yes, they decided to make it two parts, so it is longer. But like, it's also, you get a lot more of that nuance with it, which is great. I like that. It's, I think they did an incredible job. But
I'm concerned about the animals.
So yeah, let's talk about the animals for a quick second, because like, just as a general thing. So the animals in Oz could talk, and they're slowly losing their ability to talk. And we hear Dr. Dillamond talk about this, but we also see the baby lion cub. There's a lot of symbolism going on with everything in Wicked. Wicked is like five different social issues in one.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like to talk about like what were your thoughts of like what the animals are representing or how we're supposed to be kind of walking away from that.
Well, in between my coughing fit, yeah. I did walk in to see animals should be seen and not heard.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like they used to be professors and now they're not. And then mm-hmm. I saw them get together and some of them were like, I'm leaving. Yeah. And then some of them were like, I'm staying. And then they come in later and get the professor goat. And yeah, he's losing the ability. Something's happening.
Yeah. He's losing his ability to talk. Yeah.
To talk to humans. I mean, I think it could be representative of any oppressed group. I feel like it could be very relatable to women and people of color. Losing the voice is such a big thing. But also just the fact that, like, you know, I think it's a different kind of oppression when you're given a platform and then it's taken away. So I'm quite aware of the election and a lot of the stuff around abortion and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think what's happened in Oz is that it's not that the animals have always been in cages, it's that the animals were,
they had freedom and now it's
gone. They had freedom and they had things. And then all of a sudden what's happened, which is you learn later is coming from Shocker, you know, the top down, mm-hmm. is that they're losing that power by losing their rights, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that kind of oppression where you give people a platform and then you take it away can be, it's a different kind of oppression than never having it at all.
It's really like, when we're comparing it to things, and I think that one of the kind of brilliances of Wicked is that there's a lot of ways that you can see it speaking to multiple, like you said, lots of different marginalized peoples. So it doesn't have to be like, this is just about this one thing, but like you can compare it to this, like you said, like women have had pretty big strides in the past 50 years in terms of freedoms. And not only is abortion like being taken away, but it's concerning how many people are openly saying things like, let's take votes away from women, or you know, like the other kinds of things that get floated out there, and we tend to act like, oh, they would never do that, but they certainly would. They would absolutely do that if they get enough of a foothold. They get enough people saying, yeah, okay, I can get on board with that. I also don't think that women should vote. They would 100% take the vote away.
Yeah, no, and that's what I saw when all of the people, well, not all the people, but a bunch of people on my Facebook, and I've had requests about marriages before January mm-hmm. for people in the queer community, and I just feel so sad.
Yeah, I think that's like, a big one.
Done now before January, and I'm like, it gets you thinking. It's just a different, it's a different level of oppression when you say you can have it, and then realizing how easy it is to take it away.
Yep. And like, what is your mindset about that, and how do we try to stop that from happening? Like, what are the kinds of things that we do, and what are the different ways that people can declare their own freedom in that, you know? Because then I think too about like the early stages of chattel slavery and those first people who were taken, you know, kind of in the beginning of it, like they had rich cultures. Some of them were higher up in their groups, things like that. And now all of a sudden they're being thrown into these ships. And you start to think about like, okay, like what are the ways that they pushed back? And what are the kind of traumas that happened in their minds because of it? Not just like once it was kind of this thing that was happening and we had almost a desensitization to it, you know? And then also like, what kinds of things can we do? Like looking for what ways are they trying to put the animals in cages? You know, like how do we keep an eye out for that? Because like it's happening, it's going to keep happening, and to all sorts of people.
Yeah. And I thought that sort of meeting they had where it was like, some people were like, I don't, or some animals were like, I don't know what to do. One animal was like, I'm leaving. And then the other animal was like, no, we have to stay and fight. And I think it mirrored what the overall story is about in a way, is like the Glendas and the Elphabas is kind of, and then honestly, everyone in between, you know, like those two that keep Bo and Yang and the girl, you know, fluffing up the ego of Glinda.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there are in betweens of,
or like Fiero, like where is he gonna fall? You know, Fiero is just like Glinda when he comes. They're cut from the same cloth.
He started thinking, though.
He's dancing through life, and then he starts thinking, and he's like, well, shit, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
But, like, where does he go from here, you know? Like, what is his role going to be?
And I don't think he can go back, because once you start thinking,
it's a real slippery slope, honestly.
We are here
to tell you about all of the thinking that happens.
Yeah, so there was a prince in the story, and he kind of does the traditional prince stuff, which is, he's dancing through life. He's handsome. Yeah. He is one of my Bridgerton boys, I will say.
Yeah. I mean, Jonathan Bailey, good Lord. That good man. Lord.
Good Lord.
Yep. Have everyone. He can have,
everyone. Just everyone. I told that viewer, and he was like, He was like, And I was like, good. We're all on the same page. So everyone's on the same page.
Everyone.
They may not say it out loud, but they're all on the same page. But yeah, he kind of floats into the school, and him and Glinda, who honestly presents quite vapid, and
she's very Regina George in the beginning.
Yeah. And every time I see her, I actually have, this may be because I'm drinking from my green cup, but I have a much more critical view of her, I think. Because it's like every time that she has some sort of redemption arc, it's self-motivated. You know, it's selfish. It's not, even when she dances with Elphaba, where Elphaba's, you know, trying to be herself, and it's not going down well at a dance. I don't know, a dance is the best place to like express yourself, but
I know, but it happens so frequently.
It does, but Glinda goes up to her and starts dancing, and that's a part that actually made me really emotional. But then I realized she did that because she let her in the class, you know. Like I don't know that she reflected on it.
I think she felt guilt because she gave her the hat, knowing that she was going to be the laughing stock, you know.
Yeah.
Knowing that this is going to make everyone laugh at her, and then they did, and then she felt guilt and wanted to alleviate that. And I used to bring this up in my systematic theology class. When we would be talking about things like like the will and how we motivate, you know, and are our motivations good or pure or whatever. And I would always bring up in Friends when Joey tells Phoebe that there is no selfless act, like everything you do has a little bit of selfishness to it. And she tries to prove to him that she can do something selfless and lets herself get stung by a bee. And he's like, yeah, but then the bee died. So like, that was not selfless. And she's like, oh shit. And then she donates a bunch of money and then is happy because of something that came from it. And he's like, see, now you're happy. Like, so there's always some amount of selfish motivation in Joey's theology. And I think that you see the theology of Joey Tribbiani. I think that you see this also being questioned with Glinda is what are her motive? Because I think that like we understand Elphaba in terms of like how to nuance her character. We've done that before. But with Glinda, it's really complicated because she isn't a good person. She's not one of the heroes. But she's also not like clearly a villain. And to try to figure out like when are her good moments or what are her motivations, I think that's where I think it's like really like theologically rich in terms of like how are we like this, you know?
Well, and also how do you define a villain, which I think is the whole like core of the entire thing.
That's definitely a huge part of it. I think too, like because we want to be the Elphabas, we want to be the ones that are like, I'm gonna go be a hero, I'm gonna sacrifice, you know. But like most of us aren't going to do that.
You can be a self, Whaley. I'm gravitating.
I mean,
and I'm from New York, apparently.
I think we try. I think we do in certain ways, but like 90% of people are not Martin Luther King Jr. You know, like this is not, we're not all gonna, but also like we shouldn't want to become the hero, you know? That's still selfish.
Yeah, I don't think Elphaba so like, wants to become a hero. I think she's just driven by.
No, I think that's true. But like, for most of us, saying like I want to be the Elphaba. Why though? You know. And then like examining those questions of what are our motivations? How are we choosing what we're doing? How are we helping? How are we standing against? Like, if we were in Oz and we had the chance to like partner up with Elphaba, what is the role I could take, you know? What are the kinds of things I could reasonably do?
I mean, I still think Glinda's the villain of my story, but I will say,
I can't say anymore because you haven't seen the second half. So
I haven't seen, so this is maybe a good thing, is like you have the inside scoop, but like for me, I am basing this solely on the first film, and I've not seen the stage play. I've not read the book. So based solely on this film, she doesn't come off well. Like,
no, she's not.
And I hope that there is some sort of, and I think that, you know, the thing that got me with her too, is that her Munchkin interaction in that very first scene when Elphaba's dead. And she's just like, oh, and like you can tell she's wrestling with it. I'm not saying she's not, but like she still performs. And to me, I was like, that's the worst. Like the performance of like, she still cares so much about what these people think who don't really affect her. Like what, I mean. I guess she's like the prince on some Munchkin land. I don't know.
And she has some significant power at that point. Again, I can't give away too much.
Well, she pissed me off. She pissed me off.
But also, and this is where you do have to come back and say, okay, what do I remember that she did in The Wizard of Oz? Like, this is still Glinda. She comes down in the bubble. She tells Dorothy, you need to take those shoes from that witch you just landed your house on, and then you're gonna go down the yellow brick road. Like, The Wizard of Oz as a story.
Didn't tell her about that bullet train.
Happens.
Melinda.
The Wizard of Oz, like, when Wicked, like, when you see them walk down the yellow brick road, that's telling you, like, that is them right after they've killed the Wicked Witch of the East. So that's implanted. We have to remember all of those things. And so, yeah, Glinda does do some significant things against Elphaba in that story, as we all are familiar with. Yeah. Hopefully everyone's seen the 1939 movie Wizard of Oz.
And now I'm deeply concerned about, again, you know, I'm deeply concerned about Elphaba's sister, because she's going to end up under a house. I mean, because, again, if you've only seen the old one and this one, apparently Elphaba only has one sister, although there may be more out there. But damn it all, if she didn't end up underneath that damn house, I'm like, okay, cool.
Yep.
Not going to get too attached to that one. Also, F you, Dorothy. Like, I know it's not technically your fault, but, like, damn.
Like, man, you were used and manipulated by that.
You were, and also.
That pretty witch in the bubble.
Right. Also, really want to emphasize that train that suddenly disappeared on old Dorothy. They were also, just like.
My favorite thing to joke about with The Wizard of Oz, the actual movie, is that Glinda sends her on this whole big adventure. And at the end, she's like, you've always been able to go home. You just need to click your heels. Like, she could have done that back in Munchkin Land.
She could have.
Glinda, you are such a bitch.
Right? Should have, could have taken the train to shorten
that. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm not here to be like, Glinda's a good person. I don't think that at all. I just think her character has a lot of, I think it has a lot of questions for us to, like, internally take, like, how am I?
And I think The Wizard of Oz, Glinda, the old school one, is the hero's journey. I mean, you get the hero.
It absolutely is.
They defeat the thing, blah, blah, blah. Like, they learn a lesson.
Yeah.
So it follows that trope. So that's why I like this so much, because it does. And one of the theological questions that I often think about, because I teach world religions now, along with you, Christy. Yep. And you know, there's always a tempter or a wicked or a bad person, mm-hmm, or someone who's trying to, you know, whether that's Satan or Mahavira or, you know, whatever, there's always someone who is trying to, you know, dissuade the hero of religions from doing what they're doing.
Right.
And I always think to myself, it's because humanity needs a bad guy, because otherwise we have to admit that we ourselves are
the bad guy.
That we're the bad guy. Yeah. And I wonder what this movie says to that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's why I feel so, like, compelled to look at the ways that I relate to Glinda more, is because she is kind of but she's us, you know, in a more realistic way. But I think you're right. We always invent a bad guy, Satan or whoever. When I was working at an evangelical institution, there was a big kind of, I'm going to say, rage against our department, because we weren't willing to constantly talk about Satan. And there was another person in a different department who said that the number two character in the Bible is Satan. And we were like,
there's not a lot that goes on about you.
He's not. Satan isn't even a person or a being. Like, there's not a Satan. It's any adversary, right? Like, any adversary, which is often people or whatever. And so it's completely it's a scapegoat. We don't want to be the bad guys. We want to be
Thanks,
the good guys.
Dante, again.
Right? Dante and your levels.
Dante. My gosh.
When we really look at it, who's the bad guy? It's us. Like, we're the ones that broke the relationship. We're the ones with this, you know, sickness, whatever ways we want to talk about sin. We're the ones who are constantly grasping for power. We're the ones who want people to like us or whatever. And we're the ones who are sacrificing doing good things to keep those comforts.
Right.
Yeah.
And any time that we do bad, it's like, oh, well, we were tempted.
We were tempted.
It's like,
here's this reason.
And I love the Garden of Eden story for that, because literally God gave them one rule.
It was one tree out of
one rule.
One rule. It's so easy to not break one rule.
One rule.
Especially, like, at least Eve.
Imagine being a woman and being like, in your life, you don't have to follow any sort of thing to be deemed professional. You just have one rule.
You have one rule.
That you have to wear a jacket, a man jacket.
Yeah, you have to wear a jacket. That's the only thing you have to do.
The only rule.
Can you imagine the freedom?
And they couldn't even do it. And they're like, oh, well, there was a temptation, you know.
This guy told me I looked better without a jacket on, so I took it off. Like, I
took it off.
Good Lord. You had
one rule.
One rule.
You had one rule. So, like, I think, yeah, you're right. We have to see ourselves for what we really are. And also to see that, like, especially in stories like this, that good and evil are not so easily defined. Like, that's exactly. Not... Mm-hmm. Especially when you're dealing with humans,
yep.
Whether they're fantastical humans or not, is that, you know, we all have the capacity of great good and great bad.
Yeah.
And, like, you know.
And I mean, that's exactly it, is good and evil are not clear cut. Nobody is purely good. Nobody is purely evil. And where we fall in the spectrum is always kind of going to have a lot to do with how, like, the small decisions that we make. You know, it's not that you don't make a lot of bad small decisions and then in the big moment be like, okay, this time I'm going to make the good decision.
Right.
It's like you're kind of building yourself into a place,
yeah,
where that big moment happens and you're going to make a specific decision.
And clearly, like, of course you can caricature someone, but, like, and I think there's a lot to be said about racism in this film as well because of green skin. I mean, I think that's just on the nose and how she's treated so different because of that. But I think also, like, there is an impression, and again, I haven't seen the second part, but there is an impression that I got that she had done some stuff. Something had not gone right, or they were being propaganded so hard that the stuff she had done right was actually wrong, that she was viewed as, and I know in the beginning they do this little speech that's like, everyone needs a bad guy, and then they roll out all the green banners and show her as the bad guy, and she's easy to scapegoat. Yeah. I'm not saying that didn't take place, but clearly her good deeds, or whatever she did for advocacy, has been twisted, or she did bad, you know, what others deem to be bad deeds because people...
Well, I'd say, like, so that we don't give... give anything away, because I'm not going to. We can just talk about the monkeys and her giving them wings. So she didn't know what was going to happen. And she didn't know that she was being manipulated. But she did give them wings and cause them pain, you know?
She did, but it's... Oh, and that broke my heart because it's like he's always looking... What was it, like the robins or something?
He's always watching the birds. I mean, 100%, if she had known, she wouldn't have done it, right? But she trusted the wrong person. And I think, too, she was so excited about, I have this power. It's going to help me fix my life. I because, you know, there's the song, her and the wizard. They're going to do all these amazing things. So she's also kind of in that moment like, ooh, I'm being tempted by this other thing. This does not make her a bad person.
Maybe the monkeys like the wings.
But she does do a bad thing, you know?
I mean, do they not like the wings?
I mean, it causes them a lot of pain. And I think it has a lot to do with, like, this is not... This was not done with their consent. Like, they didn't want to be flying monkeys. But again, I can't go into any more specifics on that.
Okay, that's fine. No, they're clearly in pain. So one of the things, if you've not seen the film, is she does a spell, and yeah, she's got a person in her ear that's saying, one of them looks to the sky at these birds.
He really wants. He wants this. He wants to fly.
Yeah, and the monkey is just looking at her. And so she does a spell and it creates, but I don't think she realized to the extent that they all were going to get wings.
Right.
And that they were in pain. Clearly, they were in pain as it was happening.
Yeah. And, like, I think that that, too, kind of, you know, it's a good admonition of, like, how many times do we do something because in the moment we think, oh, this is a good thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's part of being human. And again, also not being just like a perfectly pure person. She's not wholly good. She's not wicked. She's not evil, but she's not wholly good in that.
Right. Yeah. Cause there's a little bit of like, I will say with Elphaba, I think partially because she's not had much guidance.
Oh,
there
sure.
is a little impulsiveness there that doesn't, she's almost the polar opposite to Glinda in that sense, is that Glinda thinks too much.
Yeah. She's super
and
impulsive.
And Elphaba almost.
Elphaba is super impulsive. Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't think about it enough. And so, cause she's trying to find something, Elphaba. And I think she thinks if she just does it, she'll find what she's looking for. I mean, in this movie, it doesn't look like she has so far, but.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, I think
she's dead.
I think what she's looking for, and I think this too, kind of comes back to a lot of things that we've talked about before, but she's looking for love and looking for connection, you know?
Her dad rejects her throughout the film pretty actively.
Yeah, like she gets rejected so often and so frequently that when Glinda dances with her, I mean that moment is really beautiful and so heartbreaking and sweet and like lovely. It's like she's for the first time feeling like, oh, this person loves me. And then
but they just cross paths, Christy.
Just cross paths. And then, like, you know,
Madame
Morrible taking her under her wing and mentoring her and then saying, like, the wizard wants to see you. She's not seeking power in the same way that Glinda is. She's seeking love. She's seeking connection, you know, right. And she's thinking that she's going to get it. And she's thinking that he's going to take away the greenness and then she'll stop being ridiculed.
Which is heartbreaking. And then she gets there and both the headmaster and the wizard are just manipulating her.
Yeah.
For her power.
And it becomes clear, like, none of these people are going to stand up for you. No, none of these people are going to be on your side. And that's so heartbreaking. Like, yeah, I mean, there's so much to come in it, too.
I was going to say, I'm not going to look at you, but I'm super interested. Don't make a face and don't do anything. But I'm super interested in where the Scarecrow and the Tin Man come into play. And I have thoughts, but like, I know they're coming from someone we met in this first movie. And like, I have thoughts.
The only thing I'm going to say is that what I wish about the book, maybe I wish that he just had a little bit more editing going on, because the book is just kind of, it's a lot. But the musical fixes so many of those problems. And it does a phenomenal job of weaving together all of the lore. Because it uses not just the original movie, but it uses L. Frank Baum's original books as well. It uses some of that stuff. It pulls in just from all over the places while like expanding it. It's a really like incredibly well done storytelling. You're going to love it.
I'm excited. Because I know they're going to have to get a Dorothy, too. And that's a question. Because clearly the beginning of the film is really, I guess, probably the middle or end of Wizard of Oz.
It's kind of towards, it's after, so they start, it's when they're going back to the Emerald City after they've killed the Wicked Witch.
Yep. Yeah. So, assumably, part two is going to have a Dorothy.
Yes.
Who do you think would be good for Dorothy?
Oh my gosh. So I've seen a few things. I want to first stress the importance of just knowing facts. Wizard of Oz was filmed in 1939 and Judy Garland has been dead for quite some time. So it's not
going to resurrect Judy Garland and bring her back.
I keep seeing people being like, maybe it'll be Judy Garland. It cannot.
Y'all, no.
Y'all, she's been gone. She's been gone from this world for a time.
We had the movie with Renee Zellweger. Wasn't that Judy Garland?
Yes, it was. Oh my God, did you see that? I saw.
So good.
It was so good, but
so upsetting.
So upsetting. Somebody also said maybe they would do like a CGI like hologram, and I was like, no.
No.
A, I don't think that that's appropriate, and also like it's a massive cop out. Like, find somebody, you know.
No.
Somebody also said her daughter, but her daughter is Liza Minnelli, who is far too old. Again, like, we just all need to be a little
wheelchair now as well.
She can't do it. Anyway,
it's gonna have to be someone young.
It has to be someone young. I don't know. There was somebody else that I saw, like, that they already have her announced or whatever. I don't know. I don't really want to look into it because. So there was one thing, and I definitely don't want to say this, but there was one thing that happened in the movie that I literally gasped loudly because I didn't know it was going to happen, and I was so excited about it. And so I'm kind of trying to take that approach to the second half as well. Like, I want to know as little as possible before I go to see it.
It was fun not knowing, I will say.
Yeah, like, it was... Again, I knew a lot of things, but I didn't know a lot of things about the movie specifically.
And it wasn't a purposeful omission. Like, it just is one of those sort of, like, you know how there's sort of cultural things that you just miss?
Absolutely, yeah.
Like, I'd never seen the Harry Potter films before I met Stuart. It wasn't like I purposely didn't go see them. It just was like, a thing I missed.
I've never seen Braveheart.
Yeah.
So,
well, you're not
I'm not gonna. I'm sorry to all of the Braveheart fans out there, but it looks terrible. Mel Gibson
playing a Scotsman, you know.
I can't anymore see it.
You can't
live in Scotland for more than a day and decide you're going to go watch Braveheart.
Hilariously, guys, the monument dedicated to William Wallace, the Wallace Monument, actually has a statue of Mel Gibson.
I know, I've seen it.
Yeah. But how interesting. I mean, I'm going to use the word interesting as that. How interesting is that?
We did a tour at Stirling Castle and then over to the Wallace Monument and like got a whole history lesson on all of it. And I was fascinated. And also I was like, why though?
When I think about Dorothy, I feel like it has to be like someone from the Disney Channel, but like, but the now Disney Channel. And I don't know because I'm 42.
Exactly.
I don't know.
It's somebody that you and I are going to not be familiar with. Because also, fun fact, did you know that in the original Wizard of Oz, Dorothy was supposed to be 12 years old?
Hmm.
Like, she's clearly not.
She's not. You can put me in pigtails and it's not going to make me 12.
I know, right?
It's not going to make me 20.
I am. Judy Garland was beautiful, but she was not 12, so.
No.
Also, yeah, I don't
think a 12-year-old would be making decisions like that.
No.
She would not have been like, well, let's go on this journey and let's do that. The 12-year-old would sit down and be
like,
I'm done with
this. This is some bullshit.
Right. This is too far to walk. I know there's a train around here somewhere.
The 12-year-old would be like, let me get on my phone.
I was like, right. She'd be like, I'm going to text Uber. Also, she'd have been like, Glinda, get me in that bubble. Why did Glinda not put her in the bubble? Put her in the bubble.
Put her in the bubble. Jeez, Glinda.
Is the bubble not able to take more than one human at a time?
Glinda.
Here's an idea. Send the bubble with Dorothy and the damn dog and then just get the bubble to come back to you.
Yeah.
Or make a new bubble.
Yeah.
I don't know how the bubble works.
I mean.
Whatever. I think Dorothy got screwed.
Dorothy Glinda's did get screwed.
The bad person to Dorothy.
Oh my gosh.
I'm hating on Glinda right now.
It's, it's appropriate for you to do that right now. It is going to be fantastic, though. When it comes out, the second part, I'm really
excited. You and I should watch it together when the second one comes out.
We should. We absolutely should. We'll make it a plan.
I mean, Christy's already going to see My Chemical Romance with my husband.
Y'all, okay, so let me just tell y'all that this is one of my new favorite stories.
It's
Leah
true,
calls
though.
Me. And she's like, you're like, hey, we're going to come. You are so vague about everything. You were like, we're going to come to Tampa sometime. And I was like, awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a reason? Like, I want you to come.
There certainly was.
But the way you were saying it, and then you were like, I don't know when it's going to be. And I was like, okay, this is so weird. And then you finally were like, Stuart wants to go see My Chemical Romance. And I was like, yes, I'm in. Absolutely. And then you were like, good.
Because he was texting me, like, the information I was giving you was the information I was getting. Like, I didn't know it. He was like, they're not playing in the South. And I was like, well, let's just go ahead and screw them then. Because I hate like,
when they are playing in Tampa.
Right. Don't play it. You're not playing Atlanta. Get off it. So, like,
their decision making on this tour is very confusing. But,
and I've booked shows back in my college days. I know how it works, and I'm just going to say whatever. Anyway, so then it was, oh, they're in Tampa.
Tampa. And then Leah goes, you and Stuart are going to go, and I'm going to stay home with my niece. And I was like,
I'm going to take care of Penny. I said, you're going to get me a nice bottle of wine and the cheese tray, and that's going to stay at home. And you guys are going to have the most fun.
It's going to be amazing.
Stuart didn't even miss a beat. It was like me trying to leave the theater where he was just like, okay, bye. I said, Christy's going to go with you to the show. He's like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
And I was like,
we got our tickets. He did a great job. I am so excited.
Waited in line for
a long time. I got some updates from both of you. It was fantastic. Everyone I know is jealous. Like, so many people are so jealous. But like I said, my favorite part was just the way it all came out. It was like, I was getting like just bits at a time. And it was like, okay, they're coming. Okay, we're going to My Chemical Romance. Oh, Leah's not going to My Chemical
Romance. I'm not. Because I know one song. And again, I've been to many a show with Stuart. I'm sure it'll be a great performance.
It's going to be great.
The tickets were not the cheapest tickets in the world. Certainly weren't the most expensive.
No, I've paid more, but I've also paid less. So
for me to know one song feels like it would be a disservice.
That's fair.
Plus, Stuart's going to be
have some time. Real. It's not until September. You could have learned them. We could have sent you.
Well, I had that thought, and then I looked back that same day, and all the have you looked at the resale tickets?
Oh, they're bad.
We should have bought more than two.
Yeah.
Except then we would be the bad guys, and someone else would be the bad guys,
and we can't do that. This is where you make good decisions, people. No, but yeah, Stuart texted me like an hour. No. Maybe 20 minutes after he got the tickets and was like, our section is already doubled in price. And I was like, yeah. So.
Yeah. And the feeling is you could just be like, oh, I'll sell them. And it's like, no, but you waited in line to see the show.
Yeah. This is what happened when I saw Taylor Swift too. My niece got them for like a reasonable amount of money. And then they just went astronomical after that. So whenever people are like, oh, you saw Taylor Swift, I want to be like, yes, but I paid like the correct amount.
Yes, and I think this is the correct amount for that.
Yeah, I do too.
Like, it's about exactly what we paid for Weezer.
Yeah.
There was a New York Times article that came out that said these nostalgia shows, because I went to see Weezer play the Blue Album, amongst other things, but they played it in its entirety. Nah. Like, we're millennials now, we have money.
Right? Exactly. This is the shit we wanted to do when we were 12. Or not.
I was going
to
say, I don't want to hear them play the other albums. I want to hear the Blue Album.
I want to hear I want to hear Black Parade.
Songs from the rest of it. They knew the assignment.
Yeah. And that's the thing. They usually play the whole album and then they play other stuff after.
They played Pinkerton. They played
It's not like they're going to just not play anything else, but this is what Radiohead did too. They played one album in its entirety and then they played all the other stuff except for Creep, obviously. And we're all okay.
And I think My Chemical Romance, if you love that album, sure it does.
Yeah.
Then it's a great thing. And so that New York Times guy, he's just like, it just shows that the best times are behind us. And I was like, no, that's not actually what it shows at all. Because I remember my parents when I was in high school going to see Rolling Stones because they couldn't afford it when they were. And Rolling Stones, if you remember in the 90s, had this resurrection, I'd say that quite literally, tour where they propped them all up and they went on tour again. And my parents went and saw them twice. Yeah. And they said, you know, we can afford it now.
Exactly. Well, and you know what? So this is a great segue into, I just watched the Yacht Rock documentary on HBO. It's fantastic. But it also is talking about this very thing of like music from the past that is having a resurgence. And for Yacht Rock, there's kind of a joke to it because it came out of a comedy about this genre of music. And then they started calling it Yacht Rock. And not everybody is okay. Like, all of the artists, not all of them are okay with being lumped into this Yacht Rock thing. A lot of them are, but some of them aren't. And I understand that they're kind of like, I'm not a joke. I'm a serious musician. Except people love it. Like, I genuinely like listening to yacht rock. I'm not doing it as a joke. Otherwise, I wouldn't do it all that often, you know? When we go to the concerts, we're having a good time listening to this music. It's not a joke. So it's not a nostalgia tour. It's like, there's still good music. These bands are still fully capable of performing it, but we have money now. Like,
we have money, yeah. I'm not 15.
I'm not, yeah.
I struggled to buy the Blue Album.
Right, exactly. Let alone
tickets to go see the Blue Album.
Exactly.
She was like, we played in 1997 or something. I was like, bitch, well, I was 15 years old. I couldn't afford to go there or drive or.
And like, some of us couldn't go to Warped Tour because we didn't live in the right parts of the country. You know, like.
Some of us.
You still don't.
I still don't.
Or like. I mean, there's just a whole host of reasons we get to do the thing.
Yeah.
Also, just like, have joy where you can find joy, because it is lacking. Overall,
I mean, so. I don't make fun of Christie and her Hallmark movies at all, so it's fine.
I mean,
I didn't psychoanalyze.
Hot Frosty is the greatest Christmas movie I've seen in a hot minute, and I will die on that hill. I am gonna make you watch it.
I'll watch it. I'll watch anything. I just have questions.
It's so funny. The thing you need to know about Hot Frosty is that it's essentially Brooklyn Nine-Nine made a Christmas movie. And so, like, they're in on the joke. They think it's funny too. Like,
yeah, it's not irony then. It's not.
Yeah. It's like Deadly Adoption, my Hallmark movie, my Lifetime movie with Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig.
Only seen one scene out of it. So
they're in on the joke. They're doing exactly the thing, but they're doing it. It's a bit. Yeah. And so, like, if you go into it being like, this is supposed to be serious, then you're gonna hate it. But
there are, in my defense of mocking it, there are a lot of Hallmark movies where they take themselves quite seriously.
Yes, many of them do take themselves quite
Which
seriously.
Which is why that Anna Gasteyer thing is so funny.
It's like, so funny. I know.
Did you come here because you're a widow? Did you inherit a bookshop?
Did you get fired?
Is your ruggedly hot ex stalking you?
That was my favorite one.
I was like, oh, God.
Oh, guys, what is your favorite Christmas movie? I'm in my Christmas phase, as we all know.
A Christmas Story is, well, we did this at one stage.
We did.
I feel like, and Christmas Miracle. I actually had, you can remember this, when I was talking about my favorite childhood movies, they were mostly Christmas films.
I know. And I was shocked.
I know. There's a heart underneath this crab shell.
I'm going to tell you, because my favorite Christmas movies are still the older ones. Like, Christmas Vacation is and always will be my favorite Christmas movie.
That's a good one.
But there are a few coming out in recent years that I really like that I'm gonna. So, Single All the Way. Have you seen Single All the Way?
It sounds terrible.
It's so cute. It's on Netflix.
Is it self-aware?
I don't know if it's self-aware.
Okay.
But do you know who is in it? Is Jennifer Coolidge.
Okay, I'm in.
Yeah, like, you're gonna. It's fantastic.
I feel like just her having her in it is self-aware in itself.
It's exactly. Also, it's a gay couple, and that's
okay. Love to see that.
You know, good representation. But there's another one that's really sad. Dan Levy made it. It's called Good Grief, but it's like really beautiful.
Sad Christmas movie.
It's a sad Christmas movie. It's a good sad. It's Good Grief. So those are my two recent recommendations. Plus Hot Frosty, obviously.
I'm gonna watch that one. I may watch that while you're off with my husband at My Chemical Romance.
In September, yes.
I mean, why not? It doesn't feel like it has to be Christmas.
I'll let you watch A Deadly Adoption when you're here, because I have it on DVD. And then you can watch it.
All the criminal minds, my heart can.
And then when Stuart comes back, you can just yell, diabetic ketoacidosis.
Oh my God. I was in the hospital. I'm telling you this story. I was in the hospital with Stuart, who had gone into diabetic ketoacidosis, FYI. And Christy is so funny, because we talk about emotions, and you think Christy is like the perfect emoter.
No. Nope.
But actually, she does quite poorly sometimes with emotions.
Very bad at it.
So, very, like, very bad at it. Really funny. So I'm just sitting there texting her, like, this is real bad. I'm in the ER. And she just sends me a link section of Deadly Adoption where Will Ferrell is going nothing less than ape shit over the fact that his adopted kid
he yells going out
ketoacidosis.
You know the dangers of diabetic ketoacidosis.
And I watched it in the ER. And I was like,
and I am sorry that I sent that to you. However,
I'm not. It made me laugh in a time that I could not laugh.
I was like, I made her laugh in a very difficult time, and that is what I am here for.
You did. Because,
no. And y'all, you again, you may not realize this, but if you are really, really sad and you need someone to comfort you, Leah is the one you go to.
100%.
If you are really sad, but you want to ignore it and laugh, I'm the one you come to.
I agree with that. But also, it was, I needed to laugh. I needed to laugh. That was great. And I bring it up. That's what, because it was such a good, people were like, can I bring you food? Can I?
And I was like,
do X, Y, and Z. And I was like, nah. Then Christy just sends me YouTube. And I was like,
you're welcome. Answer. I knew it's what you needed. I knew
Well,
it.
That's why we're friends. That's exactly. Why we're here.
That's what
On that note, yeah. Should we? That's yes. Why we're Glinda and Elphaba.
We are Glinda and Elphaba. Hopefully I won't betray you.
I mean, I'll just fly away if you do. Just fly away to the west. I'll go out west, apparently.
I'll try to be good. But yes, anyway, leave us your thoughts. We also, we have exciting things on the works for everybody. If you've been wondering where we're at, we have stuff coming out. We'll be linking soon. Just keep in mind, stuff is coming out. We'll
link my book.
We'll link it when it can. And Leah's book, December 21st. You can pre-order it if you want to spend a lot of money. Or you can just contact us and Leah will.
I was going to say, just send me a DM.
So, yeah, we're excited.
Y'all on the rocks. Instagram. Yes. That's where we live the most on Instagram. Yeah.
Our Instagram is really the best place because we're both on it. And then you can decide which one of us is responding to you at any given moment.
It's kind of a fun thing.
It is.
Sometimes I have to put Leah.
But only occasionally we will identify ourselves, but usually we just let you live in the mystery.
I was going to say, we just answer you and just let you go on. Although I think you can kind of tell sometimes.
I think sometimes, yeah.
All right.
We'll be back next week. Thanks for joining us again.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.